When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Do you think that fist dip is edible and you could use it as chip dip too?
Oh, jeez. Oh,
that's you don't fucking take that part out. It's a pre-show.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, welcome to another episode of the Knife Talk Podcast. As always, I am Marco Malmasi here with Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives and Jeff Fader of Fader Knives. I just realized I didn't say I'm of Malmasi Fire Arts. Anyways, we're here to talk knives. We're here to answer questions, kind of help you troubleshoot your dilemmas. Talk about sometimes some inappropriate things. So make sure if you got the kids listening, holy smokes.
You said children of all ages.
Well, I guess from 18 and up. Or I guess
16, depending on what stage you're in.
If you're past the Santa believing stage, then you can listen.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Anyways, yeah, we're here to have fun, chat, and talk about knives for the most part. Or at least sometimes. Anyways, we'll start out with the week, though. Craig, how's the last week been? You've been juggling the kids all by yourself, haven't you?
Ooh, yeah. My wife is back, but I'm tired. I am tired. Not just the kids, just a bunch of stuff going on at the moment. And aching tired, you know? But it's cooled down. The weather's cooled down at least, so it's not difficult. But oof. I'm feeling old this week. Really old.
You do too much, Craig.
Well, if only I had the time to do more. It's been a good week. I said it started off the week with just the kids and me in that unbelievable heat. So there's a lot of time spent in kids in the bath, sucking on ice lollies, just trying to keep cool. It sort of went well. My wife is back. I go back to the UK myself, actually, now on a week today, for 10 days for some work. So, yeah, I'm trying to get stuff ready for that. All good. Nothing to report.
Nice.
All the kids, there were no, massive issues or problems or...
No, I counted them when my wife returned it. We still got them all.
Oh, good.
We're good.
They all had their fingers and toes and everything,
exactly,
too?
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, we're good.
Both eyes.
Yeah.
All right. Nice.
Rekha,
yeah,
what's going on?
I was trying to beat the heat last week, too, after our last recording. We actually went and swam at the river. It was kind of like the last hurrah for my sister being in town as well, kind of as for the summer here around here. I think it's going to warm up again one last little bit, but we're pretty much stepping into fall now here in Washington State. But it was fun swimming at the river because I did some crawdaddy fishing for the first time, or crawfish fishing, and we literally we didn't use any baskets or cages or anything like that to try to catch them, or traps, I guess. We just literally dove down and grabbed them off the floor of the river. And we didn't get a ton of them. We got maybe a couple dozen, which is like half of a meal for one person, but yeah. we added them as like a post dinner kind of snack while we played card games and stuff like that. And I guess they're kind of messy, so probably not while we're playing the card games. But anyways, they were fucking delicious. They cooked up really quick and easy, and I don't have a crawfish boil usually has like some sort of Creole or crawfish boil seasoning that you can like buy already pre-made and stuff. I don't have any of that stuff though. But what I do have is some Penang curry paste, which is a Thai curry, and it was fucking perfect. It was so good on the crawfish. It was... I don't know if I ever want to eat it any other way. It was so good. And my sister, who's lived in Louisiana for the last 12 or 15 years. I don't know now. But she's had, she's eaten out a lot of crawfish boils, and she 100% was like, yes, this is very good. You should do it. You should definitely do this again. So that was fun. I've had it actually a couple nights out with the wife. We, you know, cause my sister was in town. She did like a pop-up with her jewelry stuff. So we went out, and then, actually last night, my wife had some friends in town. We went out again, and, the kid's been staying in at the grandparents' house for kind of like his own last hurrahs of the summer, staying the night out at grandma and grandpa's. And, so that gave us some free time to hang out and spend some quality time with friends and family. But otherwise, nice. I've been wrestling a couple sayas. I love and hate making sayas because I love the woodworking aspect, but I hate the fact that I make them so infrequently. I almost never remember what the steps are. And so every time I do it, it's like I'm doing it for the first time again. I got it ironed out, but there were literally a couple days where I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm supposed to be doing. And I was trying all this different shit and it wasn't working. And I was like on the verge of having to scrap one of them and start over again. I didn't want to do that. So I was trying to slow down or kind of like take a step away and like try to be productive in some other way, like just general cleaning in the shop and shit like that. But I finally got it figured out and dialed in, and those are going to get finished up hopefully in the next day. So
nice.
That's been the week for me.
That's what frustrating. That's frustrating when that's the crazy thing about forging in general is there's a lot of it where it's learning how to ride a bike and you don't forget how to do it, but then all of a sudden there's some little idiosyncrasies that just you have to do. And actually, now that you mention it, after we record this, I'm running down to Pennsylvania to teach a workshop at the Center for Metal Arts doing friction folders.
I saw your post. That's exciting.
Well, yeah, it's great. And I've created a really nice relationship with Pat, and I enjoy being down there, and I feel it's very important for me, and it's great for the whole, everything's really good. But I always have to do at least one friction folder before I go down there, because there are these tiny little idiosyncrasies that you can forget, and if you forget them right before you teach a class, that's terrible. So I always try to like remind myself to knock one out, and I made a reel about it, and it was really really helpful. But that's totally true. Like if you don't do things over and over and over again, you forget getting in the flow of it all, and it can be very frustrating.
Yeah, I took a class at the New England School of Metalworks, an introduction of bladesmithing class. But at that point, I'd already been forging and making custom knives for like 2 years. But again, because I was forging so ill frequently, it was like maybe once a month for a couple days, I would forge, you know, four or five blades or whatever over a couple days. Once a month. So every time I'd come back to forging a knife, I'm like, what the fuck am I supposed to do next?
This is how it is. This is with everything.
Yeah. And so when I took that course, it was great because it was like, oh, I don't know if it's 2 weeks exactly, but basically 2 weeks of time on task, day in and day out, you're fucking forging. And it made the whole forging progress. Like, I don't have to think about it anymore. I don't have to think about, oh shit, it did that. Oh, I know how to fix that. Like I never have to really stop and be like, well, what the fuck am I doing next? It's become 100% second nature, but that's because I spent that time doing that. And it seems like a waste for somebody who already has forging experience to take a class like that. But because we typically are forging, so not as frequently as, you know, every single day, it made a huge difference. And I'm so thankful that I did take that course just for the ease of going forward from that point of never having to like second guess or try to think about, oh, what's supposed to happen. It's just like second nature. And I just blast out knives. Yeah.
Repetition is underrated, and a lot of people don't like it. And a lot of people don't like even the repetition of simple things. And it's like, it's too boring. I don't want to do this. But at the same time, like every time you do something all the time, like even no matter how boring it is, you're always going to get better. It's that fucking Karate Kid, wax on, wax off. I mean, you made him wax the whatever, and then all of a sudden he's knocking people's asses out with the paintbrush. Right, who the hell knows?
Is the crane kick.
Right. Well, I tell you what. That was a very good Like, I'm glad I forged that knife out yesterday and that a little friction folder, because I had the fucking weirdest week of all time.
Okay.
We talked back in the spring during tax time. I had mentioned the fact that there was some tax information that I was waiting to get to hand it to my accountant. And it was getting late. I know that I mentioned because it was a frustration on my... We were waiting for this goddamn one form that every year takes forever to get. And I said to my accountant, I said, look, just... It's the same as last year. Nothing's changed. So, you know, you can fill it in the same as last year. Nothing's changed. He goes, no, I can't take that chance. You got to... We'll wait. We'll file an extension. And I said, you sure? He's like, don't worry. We'll file an extension. That means filing for everybody else, filing extension. That gives you a little bit more time to put your tax forms together. So he filed the extension, and obviously 2 days later, the form showed up. So we submitted the fight, emailed him the form, or sent him the form, whatever, and then we hadn't heard from him. So, you know, we hadn't heard from him, and then, you know, filing extension could be a few months. So we're just like, all right, well, the ball's in our accountant's court to whatever. May, June, July... Why isn't he responding back? Maybe he's on vacation. He's been on vacation before. May, June, July, August. He's not returning our calls. He's not returning our emails. Let's send him a letter. So we sent him a certified letter just to see. Because, you know, at the same time, Hillary and I were just like, we're getting ready to bring our kid to school. We've got a million things to do. Let's just make sure that he's, you know, hasn't moved. Who knows? Who the hell knows? Yeah. Nothing. I get a call last Friday. Is this Jeff Fader? Yes. My name's so-and-so and such-and-such. I'm the son of your accountant. I'm like, oh how are you? And I was immediately like, oh, Jesus Christ. Because it occurred to us that something bad could happen. Well, I don't know if you've heard, but my father died in June. And I, you know, so my accountant died in June. I gave him all the shit in April. Accountant died in June. And I'm so sorry. I mean, Hillary and I had come to the conclusion that is a very good chance. Like that we were not, it was like, oh my God. So he goes, yeah, so my dad, you know, we weren't very close. And we, you know, I was contacted by the landlord because I opened the door and there's paperwork everywhere. I don't know if you're looking for, because I guess he must have seen or heard the voicemail messages we were left. And he goes, I have two storage spaces I have to go. My father has been holding on to the files of his customers since the 80s. He was 89. We're like, what? We had no idea that he was 89. We'd been going to him for 25 years. He's always been really nice. He always liked talking to him. He hated talking to me. He always liked talking to Hillary. He'd perk up every time.
Of course.
So I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. He's like, oh, you have no idea. He's like, if you're looking for any forms, you know, I can't help you, but I just wanted you to know, and I appreciated it. But it was just like, ugh. And all I could think of was I got off the phone and I said, I called my wife. I said, oh, the accountant died. And she's like, oh no. And I said, if he'd listened to me in April, it would have been filed. It would have been filed. He didn't listen to me. It would have been filed, and it all would have been done. We would have been having to deal with this next year. We could have found someone else. God bless my accountant. He did a good job. Hillary and I are having a lot of stories and jokes about him. He's a really wild guy. But yeah, that was number one. And then number two is... My daughter's in college. First week went well, except for after the first day of classes, there was a COVID outbreak. And at 11 o'clock at night, we got a picture of a positive COVID test.
Oh,
so awesome. my kid was just like, what? So woke us up. What should I do? And Hillary's like, I'll do this, that, the other thing. There is no more. As far as the government goes, the pandemic's over. So the money's over. That's one of the reasons why nobody's doing anything anymore. There are no more. The money's gone, so the pandemic's gone. You're on your own. They didn't have anything that they had. They wanted to isolate, but she ended up was smart. She found another kid, a friend of hers, who has COVID, and they just kind of bunked in together. And now she's bumming me for Netflix passwords and trying.
How does she not already have all that?
Well, you can't. She did, but apparently Netflix is like. getting stingy these days. So but by the time this comes out, she'll have already gone through her mandatory quarantine from the school. But it was like, this is the what thing you worry about. Everyone says, oh, she's going so far away. What are you going to do if something happens? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know. That's the way it is. And all of a sudden,
was she sick with it at all?
She had no, it wasn't that bad. Her friend who's positive, who they're both fine. I mean, it's like a cold, but you know, it's running through. I mean, you know, it's running through the school right now. So they're locked up in this dorm room and she's trying to get the homework in, and you know, she goes away for the first time in her life. And now she's like in a jail cell for the most part for 5 days, but she's got a good attitude and, she's trying to get some homework from the teachers and everyone's being cool. But it's like, you know, when it rains, it pours over here.
Wow. Jeez.
There you go.
What can you do?
You go forward and make a couple jokes.
We could do. Shall we try?
Yeah.
Shall we try?
All the time.
First off,
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
There you go.
And everyone's fine. We're all up in the air. We're all on this side of the ground, guys. It's all good.
Yeah, yeah. It's that time of the year now, you know, where everything sort of changes anyway,
right,
you know?
Right,
it's big, big changes. So, yeah, hold on tight. We'll be fine.
All the time.
So what we got? Questions?
Questions and really good listener feedback.
Okay, let's start with that, because I'm interested to know what people thought of last week's show.
Okay.
Whether we pushed the boundaries a bit too far.
Well, the listener feedback was very good. The listener feedback is always very good. And first things first, we were talking about Ash Edwards. Ash Edwards said that he is involved in a man shed. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And
yes,
then
yes.
These guys are like breaking his balls to give him a free knife and stuff like that. Well, our friend Ronald Knives in Australia wrote, Ash Edwards. All right. So if you don't know what we're talking about, last episode, guys, his friends are breaking his balls. They want him to give him a free knife. And he's just like, beat it. So Ronald Knives says, Ash Edwards should run a knife-making class for the guys at the men's shed who keep pestering him for free knives. It'll give them an insight into what actually goes on into making a knife and also hopefully shut them up. If he reaches out to me at Gamaco, Ronald Knives is at Gamaco, we can probably help him out with some steel or something too, which is a nice gesture. So, Ash, go.
That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, you still got to do the work, but I mean, he's going to offer you the steel. And then, Ronald says, as sketchy as the name sounds, obviously, Man Shed sounds weird. The Men's Shed organization is a great one for men's mental health here in Australia.
Okay.
We're happy to help here and some of the materials we can. So, Ash Edwards, go reach out to Ronald Knives over at Gamaco. He's willing to, actually, you know what? He's willing to placate to your bullies is what he's willing to do. I mean,
exactly.
These motherfuckers
don't
deserve this kindness of the knife-making community.
No, you know what I say? I say take them up on it. You make them draw file those fucking knives and sand the blades and do all that shit.
You got to bring the forges. You got to bring the kiln. You got to bring all the tools. You got to lug all that shit around. And then all of a sudden, they're just like, they're drinking beers and thinking it's easy, and they're going to ask you to do it. Hmm. All right. So that was that. Blades by Johnny, our friend in Hawaii. Hope you're well, my buddy Johnny. He says, hey, guys, I want to say the brass slug after bedding the tang was a great idea. He wanted to know how to put a pin into a tang, and we suggested drilling a hole before heat treatment, putting in a brass slug, and then drilling that out. So great tips. Thank you, Blades by Johnny. Diego LePen, our good friend Diego LePen, says, this is for listener feedback. Your show is the only one I listen to. This is for you, Craig, I guess. The only one I listen to that I can turn the volume down to a normal level instead of constantly turning it up and down. All others, including the ones that are supposed to be made by professionals, have all their levels all over the place. One person seems to be whispering. The other person is in a video call throughout their phone. Another one seems to be swallowing the mic. I really appreciate the quality of your audio. It's always top notch. It hasn't been always top notch, but it has been recently.
We've had our struggles.
Consistent, clear, and understandable. Keep up the great works, gents. So congratulations, Craig. We finally got it.
We take it seriously, don't we?
We finally.
Yeah. The biggest issues we've ever had has always been the software that we're using rather than us. I think we do a good job. Yeah.
That makes it, see, that's what makes it the most frustrating. It's because, like, we know what to say. And even on full blast, or even on, you know, we know what to say and do. But, like, when something gets in your way, that's the worst. Bo Smith says Vegemite. We were talking about Vegemite last week. Vegemite and avocado toast is definitely the bomb. Give it a go, but yeah, go easy on that Vegemite. And then we're into fist dip. That was
fist dip territory.
Last week, we even got a message from Lawrence Lake, who says he's going to start to stock fist dip. He said that it's trend. He's going to start to stock it. Mark's Engineering says, you guys crack me up with the tip dip and lube oil saga. Where else we have? So BG Bosch is a graphic designer for the military. He was talking a number of episodes ago about, like, how he was a graphic designer for the military, and we just made the jokes that, you know, he just drawn the shark teeth on the missiles.
Yeah.
So he said, BG Bosch says, haha, I just finished last week's episode and I can't, thanks for the slight ribbing. To be clear, if anyone is at all curious, my art team and I mainly create illustrations and graphics for the operator and maintenance repair manuals on our military vehicles. We also support marketing campaigns and customer proposals. We don't really get to paint on the vehicles, but using CAD modeling, we get to
create. Okay, this isn't LinkedIn. Okay.
Yeah. Were you looking for a job there?
Send your CVs this way.
Jesus Christ. He's looking for a job on Knife Talk. All right, you're hired. But he says, I'm Canadian, spent a good part of my time in the U.S. working with soldiers. In fact, Mareko, I spent a couple weeks out near you at the Joint Base Lewis-McChord in February and used some of your food mentions from the area for guidance.
Oh, nice.
But being Canadian, I have to say sorry for boring you. And again, it's hard to shout. Yeah, we got a lot. The fist dip stuff wasn't like, I mean, it wasn't like profound as in like people wrote tomes about it. Usually people will write a whole tome about it. But yeah. People certainly liked all of our fist dip situations. Oh, and then one last thing from, we talk about like, how Instagram, if Instagram is going to bother you, if it's going to accept or reject things. And Walker Knife says, I thought you guys might find this interesting. I've been having success advertising on Instagram lately. I used to get ad rejected all the time, and I'm not sure if it's changed, but when I'm just... or if I'm just getting lucky, or whoever does the review, but I've successfully run 8 ads in the last few weeks. I've been able to drive people to my email list on my website with ads, as well as gain IG followers. There so it's, you know, it's up and down.
Maybe things are changing there. Maybe, yeah.
I doubt it.
There's a definite sort of change in people's attitudes now, I think, towards things, where I think 2-3 years ago, we were hitting sort of peak of everybody just being a little bit too concerned about other people's business and a bit, you know, and it was all a bit much. People are generally a bit more relaxed now, I think. We seem to be going that way,
well,
which is nice.
It's you know, social media is changing every day.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question about it. And the things that get flagged and things that don't get flagged, I think still, once again, I think, well, I hate to say it, but it's not a person. It's like an algorithm, and they see something or they find something. It's deep learning software, and they're just... Some guys get the hook and some guys don't. So I don't understand, frankly.
Yeah. Okay, let's do some questions then. But before we do...
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
15% off. Do it now. Okay, questions. We get them. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. If you've got a question, DM us. We'll add it to the list and we'll get to it one day. So Woodstock Bladecraft has done exactly that. And he's got a dilemma. I'm a newer maker. I have some funds, not a lot, but some money to invest in myself and my craft. Would you, A, invest in some new equipment for the shop, like a killer heat treat oven from Evenheat, or B, travel to an event like Maker Camp to meet and learn from some of the best makers in the country? Both would obviously help take my knife making to the next level, but in different ways. Which would you choose to invest in? That's a really good question, actually. Well, dilemma, I suppose. Yeah, should he be invested in kit such as Evenheat, or should he go to Maker Camp and meet makers and try and learn from them? Mareka, what would you say?
I would say kit first, because obviously you can develop the relationships later, but if I struggle, like, say you go to Maker Camp and you learn some great stuff, but then you come back home, but you don't have equipment to work on to repeat those lessons that you just learned, or to, you know, put to use some of that knowledge that you just learned. Kind of like what we were talking about early on in the episode about, you know, repetition. It's hard to get those reps in when you don't have the equipment to do the work on. I think there's a ton of really great information out there that you can learn online. But again, you need the proper equipment to start to accomplish that stuff. And I think, yeah, I just think there's more value in meeting those people and learning from those people. One, once you have the equipment, but also once you have some reps of your own under your belt and you've made some mistakes and you've figured out how to fix those mistakes, so that when you get to the point where you are taking a forging demo from Cliff and John and Jeff, or you know, grinding demo for me or something else, whatever, at a place like Maker Camp or Hammer Inn or whatever, that information has a lot more value to you at that point, and means more to you, rather than it. You know, I've had people who are complete novices, brand new, and they want me to explain some of the most complicated Damascus pattern stuff. That I'm like I was sharing on my Pattern Waddle Wednesdays, and this was a while ago, but this kid was like, I want to, can you explain and like make a video of how you do this? And I'm like, I asked him where he's at, and he told me he hasn't done anything yet. I was like, listen, when you are ready, what I've already put on this post is going to be more than enough information for you, but you got to get to that point first. Mm. And so I think kit before, trying to go and learn stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I think
it's more valuable.
You know, you can talk to people, you can learn from people, but you're not going to learn as much as just trying yourself and getting your hands dirty. Yeah, Kit. Sorry, Mareko, I cut you off there. Sorry.
No, I'm sorry for the dings. I'm apparently I have some people who can get through do not disturb mode. So I apologize.
Right?
Is your daughter getting through?
No, it's not her. Don't worry about it. Tony, it's fine. I'm like, God damn, it's so goddamn loud. Sorry about the dings. You know what's funny? I don't totally disagree with you guys, but I was going to take it a different route. And I think a lot of it is based on age. If I were to look back now, my experience is totally different for everybody else's, because I was working as a blacksmith before I wanted to be a blacksmith. So I was paid as a fabricator and blacksmith before it was like something that it was going to be something that I enjoyed and be a hobby. And it's, if I looking back now, if I were to just redo everything, I would rather take classes and figure out if it's something that I wanted to do. And then once I take enough classes that I feel like it's something worth getting, then I would start to say, all right, well, I'm going to, you know, it's like fishing reels. I always usually say, you know, fishing rods and fishing reels. You can get the introductory fishing rod and fishing reel, but you're going to grow out of it faster than you realize. And I feel like a lot of equipment's the same way. So my personal opinion is that's why people start off with the 1x24, whatever, that little tiny grinder, and then they kind of graduate up, and then they graduate up. I feel as though if I could do it again, I'd want the information in classes rather than just watching people, and then like decide if this is where I'm going to go and what I'm going to get, and then I can get a better idea of what I need. I feel like that might be the popular way to go. I mean, everyone wants to buy stuff. So, but at the same time, I feel like I would have a better understanding before I started purchasing things.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, anvils are the perfect example. You know, anvils are the perfect example. People just buy the fucking first thing they see. And a lot of times they're terrible. And it's like, they don't realize that you don't realize the mistakes. And then all of a sudden they're stuck with this anvil. Mm-hmm.
Did you see Will Selter's video this week?
Oh, when he was in Italy?
Anvils. What did he come around to my house and he's tripping over all my anvils?
What happened? He came to your fortress of anvils?
It wasn't my house. But did you see it? All those anvils?
Oh,
and
it was last week. Yeah, he went to... I did.
Yeah.
But I would try to have a better understanding before I started buying stuff. Because then you kind of know what you need. And then you don't get stuck playing like, oh, this guy's selling a foot-powered treadle hammer. I should get that. You don't want that. You know, you don't want that fucking thing.
I do sort of agree, but I think there's certain things, such as a grinder and a heat treat oven, that are the basics. That, you know, they're not little purchases. They're big purchases. But to get anything done, you do really need these things.
But you don't know the specification, but you might just say, I need a heat treat oven. You get a heat treat oven, then it turns out it's too short, you know, or it's not, you're not, you kind of just like, it's like your eyes are bigger than your stomach, and then you get something, you're just like, I wish I'd gotten this, or I wish I'd gotten this. But if you like do it for a while, and it's like, okay, yeah, the LB series doesn't have coils in the back and allows me to make a longer knife, it doesn't ruin the tip. You have a little bit more experience, and then when you have a little bit more information before you buy this stuff.
See, that's a good point. It is a good point.
I was just going to say, I was reading it as literally just going to Maker Camp, because Maker Camp, while there's a lot of great people there and they're doing lots of great demos, none of it is in depth. But when if the question is, do I buy equipment or do I take a class? I 100% am with you, Jeff. Take a fucking class first before you even decide to start dropping money. But to me, it seemed like this guy's already in that mode. Like he's decided, like he's already doing, actually just pulled up his page. He's already doing knife work. So he's got a understanding and comprehension of what goes into it. Now he's trying to decide, do I upgrade or do I try to go to somewhere where Maker Camp? And while Maker Camp is great to meet people and see demonstrations, it's not super in depth as it would be to take a full day or 2 day or 3 day class versus a 1 hour demonstration.
I never take questions literally. I go with what.
Sorry,
if it's a medium question, I try to kind of judge it up a little bit.
No, I think it's good to have that.
That's the thing about Maker Camp. Also at Maker Camp, you might watch people do things incorrectly. So just be aware that like there's some fucking there's some horse shit going on there too. Disrespect to our listeners who are there. I'm with you, but there is some fucking horse shit there too. So be aware that this is not like, you know, this is not like the college symposium with all these different professors there. There's a lot of fucking goofballs there too. So you might not get that Princeton education over at Maker Camp, you know what I'm saying? You might be getting that fucking bullshit garage sale horse shit. You never know.
For sure. But so, I think you're right, because like Jeff,
go ahead.
When it comes to equipment, taking a class and doing so, and I think, I don't know, when I started out, I built my own grinder, and I 100% wish I had not done that.
Right.
I wish I had just invested it, because I already knew I wanted to get into knife making. I wish I had just invested up front in a solid grinder that I didn't have to fuck around with. I literally had to like plug in and start working it. And if you go to broadbackironworks.com, you can get you one of them grinders. You can put in Knife Talk 10 at checkout and you can save yourself 10% on anything you get from them, whether it's their grinding packages to individual tools to whatever, tool arms to whatever. And they're great machines. They're also work cross-platform because their tool arms accept a very common 1.5-inch tool arm. But they're like the Swiss Army knife for the grinding shop. So if you are going to spend some money on your next kit, go look at their packages. Go look at the grinder packages as well as the tool arms. And then when you check out at broadbackironwork.com, make sure you put in Knife Talk 10.
I do have this kind of talking about grinders. I have a tip that I've kind of thought about last week and this week. And this is something that really changed the way I grind, even just a little bit. I'm constantly trying to work on the belt finish because I feel like the belt finish is now really helping me with, I've been doing a stone wash finish, which has been really kind of neat, and I really like it. And if you can get the belt finish right, the stone, you have to look hard to see that the belt finish.
Right.
And what I started to notice was, and I don't know if our listeners do, because we get a lot of messages from people like, my belt finish sucks, what's going on? I don't think that we've ever really talked enough about the importance of a pristine platen. Because if you're using your platen, and what Broadbeck does is Broadbeck also sells platen replacement plates that you just kind of get by it. Some people put a Pyrex on the plate, and when you're using that platen for profiling, you're actually kind of wearing away material in the platen at that spot. And over time, if you're going up and down, all the different ways, you're going to notice that your platen is indented. It's got, like, you've worn it away, it's cupped or something like that. When you try to do a belt finish with a fucked up platen, you're going to get a fucked up belt finish. I have the surface grinder attachment for Broadbeck, and I just decided to flatten the plate that they gave us. It gave us a quarter inch plate, and I got to order more too. I just decided I'm going to use the surface. I was surprised at how much material I took off to get it super flat. And once I got it super flat, I was getting such better grinds. I couldn't even stand it. So I think that we really need to focus on, it's the point where I designated one of the grinders, one of the platens only for profiling and one of them only for grinding bevels, because I want to really maintain that crispness. Yeah. And I notice a huge difference when the platen is like really crispy and clean and there's no indentations. And I would associate it similarly with if you had an anvil with a big crack in it, and then you
with a
big crack. What did I say?
I thought you said big dick.
No, I said
big dick, big crack. What's the difference?
If you have if you have an anvil with a big dick, God bless you, because I mean that is a fucking thing. But if there's a crack in it,
call it the horn.
Well, or the BIC. They call the BIC too, B-I-C-K. That's B-I-C-K is right. They call that too. But if you had like a dent in your anvil and then you forge into that dent, you're going to push that dent into whatever you're forging. It's the same thing with your anvil. I couldn't believe the difference I got when my platen was really crispy clean and flat.
Is anybody making, so you know like a file guide, you have those cowboy sort of plates. Is anybody making a carbide plate to go on a platen? That would be far more wear resistant than
I would be inexpensive, because I would think it'd be hard to, because all the platens are all drilled differently, and I would think that it would be hard to drill through the carbides.
Yeah, that'd be maybe super tough.
But it would probably be very very fragile too. I think that you gotta like use it. I think that you have to think of the platen as a consumable.
Consumable, right?
But if you're setting at one spot, you put your work rest in, and you're using the platen for profiling, cleaning up your profiles. You're gonna look at that. Put your finger on it. You're gonna have a fucking dip there. So then you go back and you're freehanding your knife. You're gonna wonder why your grind looks so shitty, and it's because you're embedding that imperfection into whatever you're grinding.
You know what the move is?
Go ahead.
Stop using your flat platen to profile knives. Use a contact wheel.
Because I see people do that.
It's only to profile it. You know, in the finish grinding.
I normally would anyway.
And the handle sculpting and the edge reading. Like, you're going to end up hitting that stuff. But instead of jamming it into the flat platen, using a contact wheel, it will help save your platen for sure. But it's actually, you can get more work out of what would otherwise be kind of worn out belts. So you can take an old 60 or old 36 that seems like it's beat the shit and you can't use it for profiling, even profiling on a flat platen. You can put it on a contact wheel and you can still get work done on that thing.
Yeah. But you're not getting it. You're not getting, if you're doing a full tang knife, you're not getting completely square.
Right, but that's why I was saying when you go in, like this is just for, you know, before heat treat roughing, and stuff like that. Like that's
roughing out.
Yeah, it's just for roughing out. Instead of standing there and just jamming it in to remove a ton of material, use a contact wheel and you can one, it's a wheel, so it's less of an issue, but two, you can get a lot of work out of your belts. But also, like, around the full tang of the hand, I guarantee you grind on that, like, even after your glue up, right? You're like, you're grinding on that to clean that shit up. That's going to clean up that, maybe the slight little hollow that would be there. But most people have at least an 8-inch contact wheel, and across anywhere from a 16th of an inch to 3/16ths of an inch, that's basically flat. And it would take very little to flatten that out.
All right. Well, we're going to have to try it out the next time. But but what I've been doing is I've been neglecting the platen because I just figure who gives a shit. And I've noticed once I cleaned it up, I noticed a huge difference because now the better the belt finishes, the easier it is for the stone wash. So, like, I'm being very conscious of that and cleaning up. David and I have been cleaning up the platen on the disc grinder, and it's shocking how much better it is.
Yeah,
when you kind of keep that platen clean. Mm. Platen talk. Look, sometimes we talk about knives. Sometimes we talk about dicks. Sometimes
deep dive on platen.
Sometimes we talk about, you know, fish dip or whatever.
Fish sticks.
Yeah.
Let's keep going. I will say too, the broadback adjustable. I can't remember the actual name of the tool rest, but it's like highly adjustable to all kinds of different angles and also
the articulated arm.
Yeah. And different heights. And so if you do want to, or if you don't want to always be working in the exact same place, that tool rest will help save your ass so that you can maybe do, if you are going to use your flat platen for profiling, maybe you do it at the bottom of the platen or at the top of the platen rather than right in the middle where you're going to do the majority of your blade grinding.
So it's
less likely to mess with
that's a fucking good idea right there. Put it at the bottom where you're not going to be hand. Look at you. Look at you.
And if you got the extra long platen, you got more space again.
Look at you.
You can just ride up and down.
See, here's the problem, and the broadback guy's got to figure out. The extra long platen is good, but the Moreco platen is better. They got to have an extra long Moreco platen. That would be it. That's what you need.
You only have so much space within that 72-inch length of belt to fit a deep, long platen.
To quote Taylor Swift, I don't care.
Did she say that?
Yeah, she said that, yeah.
Okay.
She said it.
Okay.
She said, that's what they said. When they said, Taylor Swift, do you want to play for the Super Bowl? She says, I don't care. No. I'm kidding. I don't know if that's a Taylor Swift quote. I wish it was. I wish it was. That would be a great song, I don't care. Imagine,
I can. Yeah. Anyway, whoop 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 whoop. Possible knife, Karen. Alarm! Alarm! Fernandez Forge.
That was a
Fernandez Forge.
That was a floppy. That was a floppy alert.
We got a possible knife, Karen, from Fernandez Forge. Says, I posted a knife I made using G10 pin stock. I didn't describe all the materials in the post, so I don't know if this guy thought they were regular plastic or what, but this guy made a comment along the lines of, knife looks good, but I wouldn't trust those pins. I replied to him to let him know they were G10, but I got no response, obviously. He said, I could see a concern if it was a competition chopper. Does this guy's comment hold any weight, or is he just a knife Karen? He's a knife Karen.
I think he's a knife Karen.
Of course he is. Even if it did carry weight, he's still a knife Karen for doing it.
Yeah. No, those pins are fine.
Yeah, I think a pin is there, and the only way that's going to break is if it's sort of sheared off. But like any sort of pin, I mean, you're talking, what, half inch maybe? The strength on any sort of pin at just half inch in length is unbelievable, and G10 is more than up to the task. So,
yeah,
definite knife Karen.
I would suggest, and maybe I'm wrong, tell me if I'm wrong, I would think if you just went flat pins, you know, you put together G10 pins that were glued in to G10, and then G10 handle with brass pins not peened over, just kind of just fitted in, I would suggest that the bond with the glue on the G10 would be better.
I agree. Sure. It's a lot more porous.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
I would totally think that that's probably stronger than the potential for, you know, then you're grinding the knife, the brass gets hot, it kind of loosens up in that thing. Next thing you know, you got your pin sticking out the side. I'm going G10 over the brass.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Well, look at her. Knife Karens, baby.
Fucking knife.
Yeah. We get that shit a lot. Some people do.
If you lived in Canada and you're looking for pins, where would you go?
I would go to the King. Lawrence Lake Maritime Knife Supply. He got it all. He got
even the dip.
he sent a picture of that purple dip, and he says, "I'm getting a pallet of it." a pallet of it.
Lube yourself up. I'm getting a pallet.
I'm going to be, he's going to take the market, the fish dip market by storm. Canada, prepare yourself because Maritime Knife Supply is going to give it to you, but it's going to be nice. And if you go to maritimeknifesupply.com, all your kilns, all your belts, abrasives, steels, all that stuff is all there for you. And he is a knife maker. Not a knife Karen. He is a knife maker, so he knows what you need. And if you suggest something that you might need, he'll put it up. We talk about anything on this goddamn podcast, and he's buying pallets of it. Boner Lockwood talking about fucking up yours. Next thing you know, he's got a pallet of it coming over from who knows where. Maritime Knife Supply is a place to go, even if you're United States. And he's got the Broadbex, he's got the Damasteel, he's got the combat abrasives. He's listening to us. Who knows what we talk about? But if it gets real weird, he's gonna have it, whether you like it or not.
We should test him next week. We should come up with something special.
Good old yeah.
MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Go to, he's got it all. Also, Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. Go take a look. Lawrence is a good dude.
I bet you could grease the ways for your hammer, for the hammerhead to slide up and down nice and smooth.
What's the ways? What do you mean the ways?
Where, you know, like for your hammerhead, for your power.
Oh. Yeah, you know what? Somebody's got to get that fist dip up yours and use it for the ram of their power hammer. This little giant is sponsored by Up Yours. Why not?
I'm assuming it's food safe. I don't know.
Who cares if it's food safe or not? You're sticking your power hammer to get the rammer. Extra ramage.
10% extra ram guaranteed.
Extra ramage. That Lawrence, that's your move. You get the fist dip. It'll be like gator piss. You're gonna sell it up. You're gonna sell up yours all day long. All these knuckleheads with all their power hammers are gonna be like, this power hammer isn't hitting hard enough. You know what we need? We need to fist it. we need to fist it with the up yours. And I know that Lawrence Lake has it. A Maritime Knife Supply.
There we go. There we go.
Sweet Jesus.
I'm telling you, it is unbelievable.
So back to Fernandez. Yes, definite knife, Karen. G10 pins are strong as hell. They're never going to be as good as mechanical fixing.
No.
You know, but if you're just using pins, I'd say with G10, G10 pins got to be the way to go, definitely.
Yeah, also I would say if somebody's not willing to have like a civil discourse and conversation about the merits of different construction, they're gonna just say some shit and then disappear. They 100% one, a fucking coward, and two, a knife Karen.
People say, even people with well-intentioned say dumb things. They say what's on their mind, and somebody will see one of my knives and be like, that's not my taste, but great job. What the fuck? I mean, it's like, I get that shit all the time. It's like, well, that's a little bit out of my wheelhouse, but congratulations. It's like, what the fuck do you say?
Maybe they're just giving you the slap and the tickle.
But who wants it? It's like, you know, nobody wants it. Oh no, it's too tacky for him, but thank me. Well, what the fuck? It's crazy.
Yeah, right. There's absolutely no point in saying that first part.
But
absolutely
people have no control. I've been doing a lot of cooking videos because I'm getting more involvement. I'm getting more engagement. And it's also, I'm trying to sneak past the algorithm by like just having the knives to use to cook. And I'll post something about food and somebody will say, that's, I don't eat fish. <I'm> like, you know, I get that. It's like, oh, I can't eat oysters.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. It's like, what the fuck? This isn't for you. This isn't like a fucking, whatchamacallit, a cameo video. But I find myself be like, oh, you can't put, one other guy, oh, some of our listeners is, oh, you put sauerkraut on the top first. Why? I'm like, what the fuck? Like, bro, you say these things, it just like doesn't mean anything. Yeah. Oh, I can't believe you put mustard on top of the sauerkraut. Oh, well, how dare you?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
I was like, what's the matter with you?
People want to be heard.
What's wrong with mustard on top of the sauerkraut?
Apparently, a couple people... I did a thing... you know what? I should fucking just say it. Here, let's just get on with it. God bless the people who comment on my things. And I'm just going to say this just because it was so bizarre and I had nothing... I don't go... Like I've said a million times, I don't go after people on there. I bring it here. So I did a thing about... God bless this guy. I'm just going to say it. I did a thing about hot dogs. So I was trying to do a video about the fork. I decided I was listening to the Yankee game. I played New York, New York by Frank Sinatra. I'm making the hot dogs with the goddamn with the goddamn fader fork. And one guy says, oh, you shouldn't put the sauerkraut on first. Another one guy goes, I'd love to come to New York. He's like, oh, I really want to come to New York, but I can't imagine myself and I'm paraphrasing, it's fine. I can't imagine going to a place where I can't defend myself with a weapon or something like that. Like,
oh,
and I wanted to write, all I wanted to write is, this is hot dog. This is a fucking hot dog. This isn't a political agenda. This isn't about whether or not you can be armed or not in New York. I don't give a shit. I'm for the Second Amendment, but it's just like, why would you even, turns out the guy's a cop too, from like, you know, the South. Jesus. God bless him. But it's just like, hey, we don't want you here either then. I don't know what to say. This is a fucking hot dog video, and you're making this into more than what it is. It's bizarre. People do what they do. All right, I'll get off of that. God bless them all, though. I appreciate it. Listen, I'm with you 100%.
I do want to say, I don't know if this is necessarily in relationship to the fork, but I guess it's in relationship to non-knife things that knife makers make. Did you make that spatula, or you just rehandled it?
All right. No, I had a guy who said he reached out to us and sent a message to Allison. Allison goes, I have this spatula that they don't make anymore. It was from a company that they don't make it anymore. I love this spatula. It's my favorite spatula, but the handle warped off, wrapped it up. He put it in the dishwasher 1,000 times. I mean, it's like, that's what happens. I wonder, can you put one of your style handles on the thing? And I think to myself, sure. And I said to Allison, give them a price that, you know, it's not like when a pitcher throws a pitch too close and it brushes them off the plate. Kind of like a little bit of chin music, be honest with you. Because it's like, we got to be worth our time.
It's a bonus.
Let's see I hear a lot of, so you give him a price. He says, terrific, let's do it. So he sent it to me. We chopped off the wood and we put a new handle on. And we're just like, and I've been thinking about doing spatulas. I'm actually going to be doing some type of spatula. We already cutting it out. We're going to next week or something like that. But like, it was funny because we don't normally take on jobs that we don't normally do. But I thought it would be fun. So no, I did not make the spatula. I did make the thing. We are working out ways in which to make. I want to make spatulas. Mm-hmm. I think it would be fun. But I'm going to end up rehandling a couple extra spatulas for some friends who reached out to me. So But nice. The guy's super pumped. He wrote to me. He's like, this is going to be the most expensive spatula on the planet. I'm like, bro, this is the one. You don't even know what you're getting yourself into. This is definitely not the, $150 to rehandle. This is like the cheapest. This is on the cheap scale. You have no idea what I've seen, my man. I think, and then that was the end of it. I was like, dude, you can think all you want, but this is not the most expensive spatula you've ever found. I can guarantee you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been following Alvin Kailan, actually, since you introduced me to him several years ago. And then also George Motes, who does the burger show with him from time to time. And George actually came out with like a custom style spatula. And I think that fucking thing was like $250 or something
like that. There's one called, I think it's called the Smashula. or something like that. Sheila. Yeah. There's a guy, because actually, I know they, when they first did it, it's a heavy spatula for just for making smash burgers.
Right.
And it's like, I mean, you know, some of these guys, these cooks don't know how to, I mean, if it's so hard to smash a burger down with a regular spatula, I mean, God bless you.
Nobody knows how to do anything. Good luck with the rest of your life.
Nobody knows how to do anything on this planet. You know that, right? I mean, the people in the making community, the knife making community, everybody, we've all know how to figure stuff out. But some of these guys, they're just like, oh, I think I need a different type of spatula because I don't know how to make the fucking hamburger flat. So let's pay extra $150 for this thing. It only works for one thing. But yeah, the spatulas are in. So
yeah. I remember,
and they could be easily made, I think.
For sure.
Laser cut them out and get a bender on them. And would you heat treat them?
Well, that's the thing, because I was actually, we were trying to do one, and I figured out a way that you could, all right, I might as well say it. So what I was thinking about doing for this one spatula was I wanted to know if I needed a heat treat or not. I took one of my spatulas, and I don't think they're heat treated, but they might be. And I figured out that you could, if you were plate quenching spatulas, and if you had two plates that were cut, so it's not two plates, it's four plates, you put them down and then you could actually bend it while it's being plate quenched. The problem is it's not one bend, it's two bends for most of these spatulas. So
yeah, well, my concern would be the I guess kind of the blade of the spatula being harder than the work surface and gouging the work surface. I think it's something to think about for it, just in general, for anybody, is like something in the system somewhere should give a little bit more than something else. And what's easier to replace? Is it the grill, like the flat top grill, or is it the spatula?
Well, and they're not hard. They're not sharp, and they're not like an edge for a blade.
They don't hold an edge. So no,
not like a sharpened edge, but I have seen like some fucked up flat tops from people being abusive,
right?
Either with the
corners,
the scraper blades and shit for cleaning and bricking off the flat top at the end of the night, and so that's just
I mean, we did talk in the past though when I was doing those butter knives about the corrosive properties of heat treating compared to non-heat treating. So I think a few people said there is an advantage to heat treating to stop it being so corrosive, but. Yeah, I don't know.
I tell you what I want to do is a fish spatula. That might be the best spatula of all. Mm. You see, it's a long blade and it's straight and it's very, they're for delicate stuff and stuff like that. They're awesome. They're terrible for grills, but everything else they're great. I would love to. I might rehandle the one I have, but spatulas are great. The funny thing about people who make spatulas, and if you're listening to me and you say I make spatulas, your guys are making the ones for home cooks that they've just for flipping pancakes and taking cookies off sheet trays. They're not really meant for big stuff, and it's very funny to me. I always can tell. You can kind of. I'm being such an asshole today. You can always tell. You can always tell when a knife maker or a utensil maker doesn't actually cook.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I mean, you can totally tell. And it's... Sorry. You're I'm good. Such a dick today.
Okay, do you know what would be really cool? A spatula made out of Dharma steel.
That's a good idea.
Can you imagine? Yeah. It could be pretty cool. And I've been speaking to them this week, actually. I've been speaking to Carly regarding the Dharma Steel Chef Invitational, which is in November, which is always a great, great show. Some of the best knives, all on, which you can have a look online, and they get a winner and all the rest of it. And we always do a live show for us. It's always a good time, always a good time. But obviously, we're doing the build-along this year. And what they've said is we're going to have two winners of the build-along.
Oh.
And there is prizes. There is prizes. So Pear, who's the CEO of Dharma Steel, he's going to pick a winner. And we're going to pick a winner as well.
Okay.
As in Knife Talk.
Whoa. The three of us?
So if you're the three of us, between the three of us, we'll pick a winner. If you're doing the build along, they want one picture. And she's actually underlined one stunning image only. And you can email that to dci@dharmasteel.com. So you've still got a little bit of time, but get them in early if you can, as soon as you've got them finished. And they'll be added to the list so we can start the judging process. One stunning image and a very brief description of the piece. And they can start sending those images in at any time now. We'll be posting them on social media as well and all that kind of stuff. So make sure the images are good.
And we're incorruptible, right? Incorruptible, right?
Well, I didn't say that.
I'm saying it.
I've never said that.
We're not. Wait a second. Now we have a fucking breach. We have a breach right now. A bad breach.
We didn't sign any sort of contract that said that brown paper bags full of cash couldn't be accepted.
That's okay? Beyond a breach. I thought it was going to be a little leak of a breach. That's a fucking hole. The whole wall fell down. And it's fist dipped all over the place. That's a big breach. You know, I think we're incorruptible. Blink, blink, blink.
I think we are. It's obviously a joke. Obviously, yeah. We'll look at the work and we'll judge what we think looks cool. I mean, it's an image. We're not going to get to see these things.
Right.
But yeah, it's going to be cool. So remember, Dharma Steel, they make the beautiful, beautiful Damascus stainless, amazing patterns. Go and have a look at dharmasteel.se, the patterns they have, or Dharma Steel Lab on Instagram, or Dharma Steel AB on Instagram. And I've just seen today, actually, somebody's put a ring on that they've made with Dharma Steel, and this thing is beautiful, beautiful.
What kind of ring?
So if you want to make something special, use Dharma Steel. If you're doing the build along, get those pictures taken. Get some beautiful pictures and send them to dci@dharmasteel.com, and maybe you'll be one of the two winners. And there is prizes. I know they've got like a half meter bar of patterned steel for each winner as well.
Oh, wow.
Which is big. So it's going to be cool. So get making. And get sending those images to us, dci@dharmasteel.com.
So the one image is just for the actual, like, official submission to the competition. But people can post as much as they want, right? And tag.
Exactly.
I would still post and tag, like, DCI and whatever, all that stuff, and Dharma Steel.
Yeah, Dharma Steel build along or whatever. As a tag. When you're happy with what you've got, send one. The best image you can to that email address, and we'll have some winners. It's all good. Dharma Steel build along, I think, is the hashtag. If you want to share your work as you go in, and it would be good to see what you guys are making now, because a lot of you have had this stuff for months. So I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of you have finished.
Right.
So yeah, hashtag Dharma Steel build along. Let's see what you're doing, and when you're ready, dci@dharmasteel.com. Email those pictures across.
Nice.
I think I have a. I think they sent me pants.
I think I had a shipping notification today from them. Yes, so I think pants are incoming. Yeah, we need to wear our pants for the Dharma Steel Live.
Oh, nice. Okay.
For the first time,
and just the pants. Obviously, just the pants.
I thought I was gonna be the first time I've worn pants for any podcast yet. I don't normally wear pants.
It's normally the shirt and tie with no pants.
Normally, now it's just like balls are on the seat, bouncing around.
Okay, let's go back to questions. I'm probable iron.
Improbable iron. I'm probably iron.
I am probably iron. That's a terrible name for any sort of... I'm probably iron. He's from Mozambique, anyway. Improbable Iron, maybe it is, on Instagram. Hey, guys, I got a business question for you. To what extent do you track expenses? By that, I mean things like overheads, consumables, cost of acquiring new customers, and so on. How close are you to knowing exactly how profitable each knife is? How important do you think that is for full-time makers? And he says, thanks, all the best from Mozambique. That's a really good question.
Before we start, you have to remind me after this question. We have we screwed a name up last week.
Oh,
we
sweet.
Missed okay. it. And okay. it's shocking that we missed it. So you have to remind me.
I will do. Okay. But yeah, this is a good question. How close are you to knowing exactly how profitable each knife is? Wow. That is, I'm nowhere near. I have a feeling Jeff may be a bit closer because he tracks a lot of sort of different stuff.
For sure.
And Mareko, I believe, you can spend, weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks on a single knife.
Yeah.
So it'd be quite hard to track.
Yeah.
Interested. Mareko, I mean, what do you think? Do you know what it actually costs to make per knife?
I don't. I've never really tracked the exact expenses, how many belts I'm using, how much time. And then the question is, do you also count your time as part of that expense, or is it just the materials?
Yeah, and he's gone to the nth degree, the cost of acquiring new customers as well and that kind of
right.
thing. So a lot of this data, it'd be quite hard.
So that would be like potential advertising costs or email campaigns and stuff like that. or yeah, SEO yeah. or yeah.
Yeah.
I have not done that. The best I've done is tried to track the amount of time it takes me to make a knife, but I haven't done the cost analysis, I guess, or not the cost, but you know, tracking costs.
Yeah. Jeff, what do you think?
It's interesting when we talk about like how long something takes you. If you try to track down how long something takes you to do, that's awesome. But that means that's the fastest you do it is how fast you have to do it every single time. Because otherwise...
Sounds exhausting.
Well, no, but it happens. You say, oh, this only took me 5 minutes to grind. Okay, do 20 knives and they all have to be at 5 minutes a pop. It's, it's you know, you have to take averages to a certain degree. Sure. You win and you lose. Yeah. I don't have a stopwatch and we're doing it. I'm kind of trying to figure out how much we're getting done per day. And I know what our daily cost is. I know what our weekly cost is, our monthly cost. And I know what our nut is for the month. So I'm trying to, that's the expression. You don't know what you don't ever heard that expression before? The nut?
No.
I like so it. You're like two nuts this month?
You motherfucker, you young guys, you make all these jokes. I mean, that's what your monthly nut. That's what's called your monthly nut. What do you...
The squirrel bar?
You never know about the monthly nut? You've never heard the expression, what's the
that
nut?
Sounds like some old man stuff.
You motherfuckers, is, you know what? You motherfuckers.
He gets his monthly nut.
That's what it's called. You say to someone, that's what it costs per month. That's the nut. You don't know about the nut.
I'm going to use that in some sort of phrase tomorrow. Speaking to somebody, I don't know who, and it's not going to go well, but I'm
going to
use it.
It's true. He's odd. I got a monthly nut. Oh, my God. It's a real thing. You make me laugh about this stupid shit. I didn't even realize. But, I mean, we know what it costs per month, and there are good months and there are bad months. It's good to kind of micro everything, but at the same time, it gets to the point where, you know.
You do want to lose your nut on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking derailed me completely. Completely, 100%.
I see what you mean. You're going to have, if you set like a time on, you know, as you say, if I'm hand sanding, this may take me 45 minutes. And then you put your pressure on yourself every time you do
you
it.
You have to.
You know, so it's.
If that's your if that's your cost, I'm trying not to say monthly nut because I know it's going to fuck me up every single time. But if your price is based on the actuality. Now, of course, you know there are averages of things, and there's some things work and some things don't work. I think that it's important to definitely time everything and figure out how much it costs to make this, and if you can make something on the top. The answer is yes, but at the same time, sometimes you got to like. Take up 10%, lose 10%. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
I will say when I've done batches of things, and I haven't done many of them, but when I've done batches, I think when I first did the Smith & Bard knives, I actually had 10 or 12 knives that I started with. And I started the timer when I first started primary grinding, or just before starting to primary grind for heat treat, the first knife. And I went through all 12 knives, stopped the timer, and then kind of just, yeah, took the average, divided it by 12 knives, and that was my average number. And you can do the same thing for like profiling the blades or hand sanding the blades, drilling holes, drilling scales, handle sculpting, all that kind of shit. If you're doing them in batches and then averaging,
yeah, far easier in batches. Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, like they're like hand sanding is perfect. Like if you're doing batches of knives and you can do X amount of knives hand sanded a day, and you think I could do better than that the next time. Then you address maybe it's your grinding, maybe it's your pre-prep, it's your prep before the hand sanding, and then everything's all about efficiencies and then what makes things faster. Now I have to get back to what happened last week. If we're done with this, last week
did you get your monthly nut?
Oh, this is better than a monthly nut. This is better. So Mareko is reading a question from Allard Forge. And he said what his name was, and Mareko didn't notice it. I didn't notice it. You didn't notice it. I noticed it after we listened to it. He said, this is a question from Allard Forge. He goes, my name is Dixon Side. Dicks inside.
We got done.
We got fucking, and he got nothing. And I felt terrible. Listening back, I was just like, dicks inside? We missed dicks inside. So Forge Allard, you deserve a redo. You got fucking, it went right over our heads. Mareko's reading is like, Dixon Side from Allard Forge has to say something. And we're like, yeah, well, let's hear what Mr. Side has to say.
Well done. You had us.
He should start a cider company.
I got Dixon Cider. I think I've heard that.
I think there's one out of Texas.
Didn't Craig, you weren't sending us that Dixon Cider.
I sent it to you. Actually, right. When I saw
and you didn't pick up on his name is Dixon Side.
No. All right. Yeah.
Got us.
Anyway, we were talking about efficiencies anyway, weren't we? And, you know, making sure how profitable each knife is. What if I told you I could take 10% off all your consumables?
Whoa.
You'd be all over it, surely. If you head to TexasFirestSupply.com, you can get your Indasa, Rhino-Wet, your sandpaper, and anything else that they sell, and get 10% off by using Knife Talk 10 at checkout. And obviously they sell everything you need, whether you're a farrier, whether you're a bladesmith, a knife, whatever you want to call yourself, TexasFirestSupply.com. Go take a look at everything they've got. As I say, they do have Indasa Rhino-Wet, which is the sandpaper of the superstars. It's what everybody uses. Make sure you fill up your basket, use Knife Talk 10, and get 10% off.
10%. That's unbelievable. You know what that does? That rubs off the monthly nut.
It rubs off your monthly nut. Oh, we're children. Absolute so children.
This isn't that bullshit laughter from other podcasts. It's a real fucking... Craig and I are just trying to make each other laugh. It's all that matters.
Should I take this next one from Tortuga Blade Works?
Please do.
All right, it says, appreciate all you gentlemen do for this great community and the many hours you've entertained us while in the shop. Question, do you ever let blemished knives go out to customers either at a discount or with some understanding of the blemish? As a rule, I don't at all, but I often have customers ask if I have any blemished knives that I'd sell at a discount. I generally always say no because I only want my best work out there, both for the customer experience and because you never know whose hands the blade will end up in and be evaluated by. So letting selling blemished knives at a discount of some sort, or just being like, all right, but just so you know, there is a slight issue here.
Yeah. I'd say, yes, I have many a time.
Okay.
And in fact, most of the time, I'm probably not 100% with that knife, knowing that I can do slightly better next time. And I think that's okay, depending on what it is. If it's an obvious... I mean, we see our own work in a slightly different way because we see every step that we're doing. And some things, we always know, we could do better next time with that. And there's always something, even if it's, you know, the underside of a handle or the inside of a handle, of a scale, you know, where nobody'd ever see. So there's always something... But I think when you look at the whole package at the end, the whole thing, and for me, my every knife sort of goes via my wife, and she'll have a look, and I'm thinking, can you see anything with that? And I know something, and she's like, no, not at all, it's perfect. And I think sometimes we need that outside person to look and to tell you that, because we know, you know, those little things, and. Most of the time, I mean, I say blemish or, you know, there's certainly not faults or anything like that at all. But it's just something that we think we could maybe do slightly better with next time.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why we do what we do anyway, because if it was perfect every time, God, it'd be boring.
Boring. Yeah, I think every piece that I send out, there's always room for improvement. And there's things I see, like probably at least half a dozen things that I see that I'm like, oh, all right, well, next time, hopefully I can do better on that. But what I think for me, blemishes are things like an errant 60 grit scratch on a satin finished blade or something, like somewhere on the face. Or say you did like a really beautiful satin finish on the blade and then it accidentally rubbed against something and it got like a funky scratch. And instead of fixing that, you're just like, I don't want to go back to that. So then you're like, okay, if somebody wants to buy this, they can buy it. I'll discount them, whatever. 5%, 10%, whatever you think is fair. Or they just buy it knowing that that's what it's going to look like. And you just have that level of transparency. And when it comes to blemishes like that,
that's slightly different than,
yeah, yeah, I would have a hard time sending that out. I just finished up a knife, and the handle material has what would typically be considered flaws that need to be filled. But when I was looking, sometimes I fill those things, but when I was looking at this handle material, it actually didn't really, it wasn't anything that was going to damage the knife over long-term use. And it actually kind of like fed to the aesthetic, because it was kind of like a brute to forge knife. And so the handle material also had some kind of quote unquote rough or flaws to it, but it fit the overall aesthetic. And I let that go, where normally, if it was like a really highly refined knife, like a Mosaic Damascus Integral chef's knife or something like that, I'd be like, I gotta fill that. But because it fit the overall aesthetic, because there was kind of a sense of intention to that look, that was fine with me. But when I think blemishes to me are things that are accidents, or like a portion of the handle chips out, or there's an errant scratch, like I said, on the blade. And then you're just like, I'm fucking done with this thing. Somebody can either take a discount or just accept it as it is. And I can't do that myself. But
yeah, I wouldn't. But yeah. I think if it's communicated well, I've talked about a brand in the past, Hyatt Denim, and they make handmade jeans, and I love them. And I love the way they brand themselves. Everything is amazing. And but they do a sale once a year, and they call it gold for the price of silver. Oh. And this is stuff which is almost like B stock.
Okay.
There may be like one errant stitch on there, so they're aware that there is a fault, but it's so small that's not really noticeable unless you were that maker who made it. But they actually label gold for the price of silver, and they say that it's not perfect stock, but they do discount quite heavily, and they do that once a year, like for one week. It's part of their annual sort of marketing strategy.
Right.
And that sort of works, because they're very upfront with it. And they'll even put, you know, because each pair are, you know, they're handmade. Mm-hmm. So the one that you see on the website is the one that you buy in. So they will take a picture of the slightest little blemish. And you're like, well, to me, that looks perfect. I don't see, you know. But the maker themselves weren't 100% happy with it. So they go in that sale. So if it's communicated well, I think, yeah, you could do it, I think. But we've talked about this in the past as well. There's different levels to this game, where Mareko may take 3 months on a knife, and everything has to be perfect. Or you could be doing a run of knives and they need to be out in, you know, X amount of time. I say I wouldn't let a knife go out with a fault, but if I'm not, you know, 100% with it, I've learned to be okay with that.
It's interesting, because when I was thinking about it, I thought about, there was one point where I was grinding a knife, 440C, and it had some deep mill scale pitting that translated into the finish. And I thought, I like it. It doesn't read to me as something that I like, well, it shouldn't be that way. Now, if it was a set of six knives that had to be identical, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. But like, it was like an artifact of the production. I didn't have a problem with it at all. However, it is like you're saying, levels. Like, there are times where I'll be putting a handle on, and then I'll see something that the difference between a crack and a fissure and a natural, you know, a natural vein in the wood versus, like, is it a crack? Is it a vein? Is it, what's going on? You got to make a judgment. I make a judgment call on that, and I'll usually replace the handle, because I'm just like, if I'm thinking about it too much, then that's the other thing. I usually have this thing. If it bothers me enough that I'm thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it, I just take it off and redo it, and don't really think too much more of it. But
that's a good move.
You don't want that big throbbing vein in the middle of it all.
Yeah, you know what it'll do. It'll affect the monthly nut. Fucking retard! So stupid.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. But you laugh. See, the problem is, you little bastard, you laugh, and that makes me laugh. I can't help it. You start with that Ricky Gervais laugh of yours. I can't help myself.
Yeah. So yeah. Sorry. Back to this, Jeff. Yeah. Blemishes.
I'm fine. I mean, sometimes
I've got a good example. I've got a good example. Then, when I was doing camp knives, I did for the first time. I did G10 sheaths, and I wasn't. Well, I wasn't 100% happy with them. They were the first ones I'd made. They were the best I could do at that time, but I knew that in the future they would be better. So again, not there was no fault with them, but the actual finish and the way, you know, aesthetically, I think could have been better. So I think sometimes you give it your best shot, but knowing you can get better over time, especially when you're doing something new. And I think that's fine because it doesn't affect... You know, the product as such, this is almost like an ancillary bit of the product, which still functioned perfectly well anyway. Yeah, so that's probably a good example of thinking, well, that's as good as I can do at the moment. It's going to go. You know?
Well, it reminds me of the reason why we don't sell friction folders as part of often. The only times I use it as a class because there's a riveted, the pin is riveted, there is... little adjustments that would make it different than what a normal folder buyer would be used to. Like there are, it's almost like a pair of tongs. You know, if you have a pair of tongs over time, you opening and closing it, the rivet kind of, you know, conditions and you got to be able to fix it. I've felt the need that over time, I'm not interested in getting calls saying this thing loosened up. What do I do? And I don't want to say, well, you just put it on an anvil and give it a knock. Or you know, if it's too tight, you put a little, you know, WD-40 in the hinge and you put it in some soft vices and move it around. I don't want that. And that to me is almost like a blemish where it's like, I can't control.
It's out of your
I
control.
I can't control all of it, so I'd rather just not have it. And I think to me that's kind of what a blemish is like, you know, standing behind something too. Like, I don't necessarily want to have to... send I think when we had one, I made one tiny knife out of Baker Forge and Tool, and there was this that beautiful stuff, and there was one little tiny dot of nickel, but it wasn't a blemish, it was just a part of the way it was. I ground it, but it was just like one, and I just made the decision, like, we'll put it up on the website, but I'm gonna write that there's this one little spot of nickel, you know. I just wanted to make sure that wasn't just like I wasn't hiding something. But at the same time, I'm not going to illuminate everybody on every, you know, if you put your magnifying glass up to, you know, section 4B, you'll notice, I don't want to do that, you know, because I mean, because then all of a sudden you're opening yourself up to that. Like, you know, I just don't want to do that, get a GPS tracking code on, you know, some like fucking scratch you don't like.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, before we take the next question, I want to tell everybody about knifeprint.com. We talk about this every week because it's the future, man. So imagine that you can design your knife in a browser on your screen. You can press a button and they'll send you a blank that's been laser cut out. That's essentially what they do. But there's a lot more to it than that. So if you've never done CAD before, which is computer-aided design, you'll know that it's a ball ache. You need to, you know, get software, and you need licensing and all the rest of it. You don't need to with knifeprint.com. It's all in the browser. You just log in. They've got special CAD tools which are knife specific. A really great education center which will show you how to, you know, how to use the tools that they've got. You can then print out your designs to paper for a template if you want. Or as I say, you can press print, choose the stock of material you want, the thickness, and they'll laser cut or water jet it, and they'll send them out to you. Really, really great service. So knifeprint.com, go take a look. Okay, what else have we got? Anything else,
DTM
Jeff?
Shenanigans, he has a question. This is DTM Shenanigans says, managed to score a day or two to head to Makers Camp this year. Do you gents have any recommendations or tips for the best Maker Camp experience for someone who can't attend the entire event? So the Maker Camp over up in Durham, East Durham, not too far from where Jimmy DiResta lives. And it's a big space where they have tents and then they have a campsite and you can go, and there are tons of makers and blacksmiths, and me and the boys of Modern Forge are going to be there. Cliff, John, Jesse, Carrie, we're all going to be there. Mareka's going to be there. Broadbeck's going to be there. All these, you know, and then their woodworking people are going to be there. And it's kind of like, it's like an outdoor convention almost. It's fun. And then they have barbecue at night, and then they have campfires at night, and then they have, like, there's plenty of drinking, and there's plenty of carousing. So
there's karaoke.
Yeah, if you want that.
I was trying to think of a Rolling Stone song that I could sing for you.
I'll tell you, we had, back in the day, we lived with this, it was a very international apartment, and one of the couples that lived there were Japanese, and they used to drag us to this karaoke place where you rent a room, and we'd get booze and do karaoke, and the wife said to me, if you don't want to do karaoke, the most important thing you should do is find one song and practice that one song and then be good at that one song, and then you don't have to do it anymore. So I would do Jumping Jack Flash every time, and then I would do all the, but that's it.
Yeah, it's amazing, especially when people have had a drink. They're like, I've got karaoke, I've got it sorted. They'll know the first few lines or the first, you know, up to the chorus. As soon as they get to a bridge, they're like,
the voice gets really quiet.
Never heard this song before in my life. yeah.
Do you hate karaoke, Craig?
No, I love it, actually. To be honest with you, I was never one to go on karaoke. I was just like, no way. But like the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, I was just like, fuck it, and I love it. It's great fun.
Well, you're a professional singer now, so.
Well, I was going to say, isn't that like your gig?
I wouldn't quite say that, but wouldn't quite say
that. Well,
you're
taking money for it, so you're professional.
Yeah, I suppose. I did karaoke when we went to Spain, actually. I was very, very drunk.
What did you sing?
I sung The Killers, All These Things. All these things that I've done. It's good fun. Shall we call it a day?
We didn't tell this guy what he should do.
Oh, fuck that.
There you go.
No, of course. What should he do?
What do you think, Jeff?
I think you should get yourself the package where you can get some food, number one. Don't, you know, that, get a package, get some food.
Or bring a lunch or something.
Bring a lunch, and then just go meet as many people as you can and see different things and try stuff out. You can do some blacksmithing even if you've never done it before. I know that Bob Menard will run, they have forges, and they'll show you how to cook with a coke forge and an anvil, and then you can get in line and then forge for, that's a good time. That would be definitely something fun. I mean, you're not going to make a knife, but the coal iron guys will be there. They're really interesting to talk to. Good guys. There's a lot of good people to talk to. I would try to think about what you want to get out of it. If you want to do demo-y stuff, or you want to kind of meet people and talk to people. And then nighttime's fun. I mean, they have food, and then the campfires are a lot of fun. I think you can just be open to it, and then you'll be fine.
I would say that, like, it can be kind of busy and people are walking all over the place, kind of like Blade Show in a way. And so maybe have a few priorities so that you are really important to you to catch. But then, yeah, like Jeff said, kind of be a little bit more open and flexible to kind of check out some new things. And there's people that are doing all kinds of stuff, from 3D printing with plastic and resin to, I think last year, there were people doing glass, and there's the Total Boat people are building boats and using epoxies and resins and stuff like that. And they have CNC routers and the forgers and all kinds
of
shit.
Don't plan on making something important.
No, don't.
Like, a lot of people do that. They're like, I'm going to come and I'm going to forge it. No. You know, you'd be lucky if you knock a leaf out or a lass hook. And Bob Menard's going to make you do an ass hook or something. So just go have a good time, meet some people, you know, enjoy the camaraderie, and it is a really kind of a nice event. It's a really, really nice, probably one of my favorite events to go to.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, let's call it a day then. Thank you all for listening. Next week we have a special show. We are on show 300.
300.
So yeah. Well, maybe so. I don't know.
Well, you're going to be from. Are you going to be able to make it? Are you going to be in?
Yeah, I travel on the Thursday. Oh, yeah, which is a week today. Yeah, I'll be able to make it. Yeah, definitely. I'll be tired, but I've been driven all
day. We could do it the day before if you wanted.
That probably would be better for me, actually. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's the after show already.
Yeah. Okay, it's the after show. Wait there just a sec. No, for sure. Let's do it properly. Come on, we're not amateurs.
You know that?
Yes, let's do that then. Let's, if you're both available, let's do it on the Wednesday. That'll be good.
I can't. I just realized. I just realized.
Great suggestion. Say that. Look.
I fucked up. Yeah. I just realized I have a thing.
Look, so look, in the real show, you pretend to be this nice guy. As soon as we go to the after show, you go like, nah, I didn't fucking mean that.
Is that the 7th?
Oh.
No, is it the 6th? Look.
Wednesday is the 9th. Oh, shit. I'm looking at the wrong month. 6th.
No, Wednesday is the 6th. Yes, yeah.
6th. I think. I don't know. I don't know. I have a...
Okay.
I hate to even tell you what I have to do, but I don't worry about it. But okay. I'll let you know. I'll let you know later.
Okay. Yeah, just if not, don't worry. We've got the Saturday and Sunday as well, maybe.
Okay.
Which would
be relaxed, you know?
Yeah, if you're available, either of you, the Saturday or the Sunday would be better for me.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, I can do that.
Yeah. I can do that.
We'll see. I'm sorry.
Yeah, listen, I can do that.
Listen. I'll tell you. Hillary and I are trying to spend as much time as possible, and we're filling the weekends up with. She's got plans for us, so we're going and doing all sorts of stuff. And I'm excited because we're transitioning into empty nest. So Hillary's making a lot of plans. There's a lot of trips and little things, and it's kind of funsy. So I just don't want to like commit, but. We'll figure something. We always do. We've been figuring it out for a long time.
Let me know when you... I can do any day but Thursday, I suppose, because that's my travel day. So, yeah.
Okay.
You just let me know.
We'll figure out in the group text.
Okay. This is great
content.
It ain't
great.
Can you believe we're on nearly episode 300 and we're putting out shit like this?
It's not optimal. So anybody watching or reading or listening to anything any worth a damn?
I am watching The Patient with Steve Carell it's on Disney for us. I'm not sure what it'd be for
it's
you.
Probably like Hulu.
Really, really
or
good.
Cinemax.
Really, really gripping stuff. And it was clearly all done in lockdown because basically he's a psychiatrist, but he's taken hostage by one of his patients.
Oh.
So he's chained to the floor in this room, and they don't get within 3 meters of each other. It's all very obviously done in COVID, but it's really, really good. It's like they're like 20-minute episodes as well, so it's like you've got to watch the next one.
Oh, I got you.
I think there's 9 of them, and I'm on about 6 now. Really, really good. Really,
but
good.
It's dark, right?
It's dark, but but it's good. It's like really fast paced, and it's really. Edgier seed stuff, and there's a lot of drama involved, yeah. But when there's, 3, possibly 4 actors in the whole thing, it's very good. Sure. Very good.
I've been watching 1899, which I think is on Netflix. It's about some sort of ghost ship. I don't know. I'm, like, on the 3rd episode, and I'm still not super into it yet. And so I'm still going with it, but at the same time I'm kind of like I watch this when Sarah's been hanging out with friends lately because she's had people in town, and so I try to watch like scary kind of creepy spooky stuff because she fucking hates that stuff, which is fair.
I've got something very spooky happening in my life at the moment. So as bizarre as this sounds, Amy and I may be buying a church.
Oh.
Not because I'm thinking of becoming ordained or anything.
Sure about that?
It's an old community church.
Yeah, seriously.
It's an old community church back in Wales, and it's like dirt cheap. But the thing is, it's up for auction, and it's called Salem. It's the Salem Chapel.
Okay.
And the auction number is number 13. And it's meant to be haunted. And there's all these things just like, fucking up. I'm obviously going to get killed in this place. It comes with a graveyard. And, you know.
Oh, sweet.
Salem, lot 13 with a graveyard. It's asking for trouble, I know. But that's one of the reasons I'm going back, actually. So, yeah. But, so that's going to be spooky as hell. And I don't deal well with spooky.
Do you have any, like, if you were to get this, do you have any sort of responsibility towards the cemetery? I mean, obviously you can't, like.
Yeah. Well, the cemetery needs to be there for, I think it's another like 200 years.
Oh, wow.
So you've got to give people access to, it's very small. I think there's like 10 stones on it, and it's a very small patch out the front. There's about 10 stones, and they've been there for, you know, their relatives are probably all dead. This building's 400 years old, you know? So yeah, it's very old. But I don't think you obviously can't, you know, dig them up
or charge them rent.
Or charge them rent. Yeah, it's just they're just there. They're just there. Got to live with it. But yeah, so that's going to be well spooky if we manage to get
there.
But
you going to turn it into like an Airbnb?
No. So it's a listed. I don't know if you get them in America. We get listed properties over here. So buildings of significant architectural importance. Okay. They're listed with the government, so that basically they restrict what you can do with them. So this one in particular, you couldn't make residential in any way. So we're thinking of it becoming a community studio and like cinema as well. You know, it's back in the village where Amy was born, back, you know, where her family grew up and all the rest of it. So we know it quite well. And it's, you know, it's pretty cut off from, you know, the rest of the world. So it'd be nice to have some sort of community, I say, you know, once a month cinema or, you know, that kind of thing to put on for people. But yeah, we'd have a recording studio there as well. So I could go back and we could get bands in and all that kind of stuff.
I could see you pirating movies and playing them on a big screen in the church or something.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, 18-foot by 18-foot porn.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You know, that ought to go.
That's one way to be struck down, isn't
that ought
it?
To
yeah.
Go
yeah.
You really
put playing Devil's Rejects and Halloween inside the church. Yeah.
Really get yourself into some situation. You've got a lot of stuff with you.
Why not? Why not?
You know what? Can I tell you guys something odd?
Go ahead.
Or I feel it's odd, but for me it's very, I don't know, it doesn't bother me. Ever since I was a little kid, I've always loved walking through cemeteries.
That's weird.
They never bother me at all.
That's weird.
Church, but weirdly, even churches spook like me out. Because you go in and they go cold because the big thick walls and the stone, and you hear this reverb when you talk and it echoes.
I get giddy or laughing or anything. It's just like, for me, it's like walking through a park, like walking through Central Park, except for it's a cemetery.
Okay.
Except for it's a park full of dead bodies.
Okay, that's not weird. That's not weird. Now, if you were just like, you step foot on a cemetery, you take your shoes off and start smiling, then that's weird.
Dig my fingers down to the freshly turned
earth. It's called earthing. What is it when you like walk with your
grounding?
Grounding.
Yes,
Kumarek likes to ground on a cemetery. That would be weird. You know about grounding?
Yeah.
Craig?
I'm familiar.
Yeah, I know what that is. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
our
listeners, it's when you walk barefoot in the grass. There are certain baseball players. There was this great baseball player who used to play for the Yankees, Matt Carpenter, and he, no matter what stadium he was in, he'd show up half an hour earlier than he was supposed to, and he would walk the outfield with his shoes off, and he would ground, and he felt like he was connecting with the stadium. It was kind of weird.
Very strange.
Well, yeah. What are you gonna do? Yeah. I'm watching nothing. Nothing.
Honestly, give it a go.
The patient.
What did I say it was called? The patient. Yeah, it's very
good. I've gotten to the point where I'm just like, I want to not have nightmares. Like, we haven't been sleeping well. Hillary and I have, like, weird dreams since we dropped Lila off. It's, like, every night. It's been,
like anxiety dreams?
No, it's just, like, dream. You know, I like it when you fall asleep and there's nothing. I like nothing.
Interesting.
But we are, like, it's, like, vivid dreams and, like, it's not peril. It's not anxiety. It's just, like, you wake up and you're tired from all the fucking brain activity.
Oh,
it's just like there's too much dreaming.
You
knock
feel like
it
the
off.
Dreaming is disruptive to your sleep.
It's disruptive. It's thinking. Oh, I woke up. You never know what happened. You're not going to believe what happened. What happened? And I forgot. But at the same time, it's just like you were so goddamn active that it's just like, how the fuck can I rest if my brain's running around like a goddamn gerbil in a wheel?
Yeah.
Yeah. But this isn't like this. There's no peril in this. It doesn't put you in that position, you know. But it is good anyway. Anyway, right. Let's call it a day. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you next week for our. We don't know when we're recording it, but it'll be live. You know, on Monday,
of course,
as it normally is. Episode.
Should we do something special for it, or just do our own thing? All right.
I might put some pants on.
Yeah,
maybe.
Girl. Yeah, girl.
Right. Thank you all for listening. Bye for now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.